to you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Our guest today is Mother Claire Watts, and she is a co-founder and co-director of the Order of Christ Sophia, which operates 13 centers of light around the United States. It is our pleasure to talk with Mother Claire Watts about her latest book, Mystical Roses of Peace. This is Mother Claire's second book about Christian mysticism, and in it she has compiled a bouquet of spiritual teachings that speak directly to the reader's soul, guiding him through the tender terrain of the heart to true inner peace. Filled with wisdom, fire, love, and practical advice, Mystical Roses of Peace serves as a guidebook for those seeking God. In each lesson, Mother Claire acts as a bridge between where we are and where we find God by weaving together her deep understanding of the great mystical truths with the practical steps one must take to cross that bridge.
Wow. Well, and she is also an ordained minister, or a priest, excuse me, and master teacher in the order. She found the Boston Center of Light and is currently helping to develop a retreat and conference center in Colorado. Prior to her full-time engagement with the Order, Mother Claire worked as a psychotherapist with a focus on Jungian analysis and as a certified midwife, a profession she practiced for 18 years. Mother Claire, thank you for being with us today. It is really a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I've read in your bio that you are a mother of four adult children.
That's correct.
Did you start your studies while they were still young, or
definitely.
Or after they were?
How did I do it? Is what you're asking?
Yeah. Yes.
You know, a lot of mothers ask me that, or women wondering about how one might do that. What's important is to recognize that if you're not continuing to develop yourself, if you're not making your inner life important, you're actually going to mess your kids up. And Carl Jung wrote about it many years ago, saying when women don't continue growing intellectually and spiritually when they have children, then they're either going to make their children live their unlived lives for them, or they're going to be jealous of their children and compete with them. So we're going to mess it up.
I never thought of it that way. That's interesting.
And the mother is a hub of the family.
Yep.
So where she is where the whole family gathers, might be said. So in your teachings, you actually help women be able to combine a busy life and bring in a spiritual life at the same time.
Yes, I work with men and women, but with women that is often what the focus is, often where they get stuck and hung up on feeling guilty about not doing enough for the kids, or then way overdoing it for the kids. So what I tell women is that they need to sets their priority of that the divine, the God, the spiritual comes first. It's the first commandment. It stands everywhere. It has to come first. And you make that central, that you will not sell that out for any other priority. And whatever you place central in your schedule and in your life is going to get done. It's the things that are down number four and below on the list are the ones that don't get done. So you have to stand up for the importance of your spiritual development and life so that you can actually stand up to the family about it too, that this does matter and I do need to take my time to do this, and everybody will be the better for it, for my continuing to do my spiritual growth and development.
Well,
you have written two books. And maybe you've written more than that, but I just see two. And
it's two, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. The first one was Giving Birth to God, A Woman's Path to Enlightenment. And it's a chronicle of your life as a spiritual seeker and the mother of four grown children. And the latest book is about Christian mysticism, and it's called Mystical Roses of Peace. That title is very luring to me. So I'd like to know more about it and how you got the title and more about the book.
Well, the title is a hidden reference to Mother Mary, actually, who was in various mystical writings referred to as the mystical rose. And much of what I teach and focus on and work with people on is developing their inner peace. So through what she is in my life and what I have grown into and developed through her help, I have these gifts of each of the chapters in the book being ways that people, very applicable ways that they can keep growing deeply spiritual, not just superficially, not just the foofy stuff, actually deep spiritual growth, while living in the full life that most of us have.
It's interesting. I went to a Catholic church several years ago, and I spent a great deal of time at Mother Mary's. When I got home that evening, I had not been feeling very well. And in the middle of the night when I woke up, I had roses that I smelled all around me, and there were no roses to be seen or that I purchased or anything. It was such a beautiful smell. And at that time, I realized it was Mother Mary. And ever since then, every now and then, I get this smell of roses throughout my home. And I'm just awed when that takes place. And so for you to say this, I didn't realize, you know, what this book was totally about because I hadn't read it. So it was a very mystical experience for me also with roses.
You know, numerous people have reported having a similar experience like that of having felt her presence and then smelled roses. So they've been associated with her and with very deep and moving experiences like yours sounds like it was for ages, forever. So she didn't get that title of the Mystical Rose of Peace from nowhere. There's real meaning to a lot of people who, like you, have had their own experiences of her.
Goodness. My goodness.
Well, in your teachings, she is at the same level as Jesus. Is that true?
She is, yes. It has been in the history of the Catholic Church from the beginning, depending on how women were viewed in society, that's how Mother Mary fared. Or maybe it's the reverse. It's hard to tell which came first, but she has gone up and down in being honored and respected or then being considered just some lucky girl who got picked to be the mother of Jesus. in the years of chivalry with the knights and all, when they honored their ladies so much, Mother Mary was very high on everyone's respect list. And much to do was done about her, and she was just very highly regarded. And then in the years when women were being slaughtered, that have often been called the woman's Holocaust years, where so every woman who had any smarts about her would be accused of being a witch and then burned at the stake or drowned or whatever. During those years, Mother Mary was completely disrespected and disregarded. So now we're at a place where in the 20th century, twice the Catholic Church upped her status. Once she was moved up to being given the title of Mother of God. And when that happened, it was in 1954, Carl Jung, the psychiatrist at the time, said that he predicted that would be the most important event of the 20th century. And this was after two world wars. Mm-hmm. So the reason is because his area he was expertise in was that of the world of archetypes. And he knew that the Catholic Church held the prerogative over archetypes for the Western world, mostly because the Protestants didn't believe in archetypes, so that left the Catholics in charge of archetypes. And when they announced that the archetype of the divine feminine was boosted up, that it would change everything. And in fact, within years, the women's revolution started. And everything was being questioned about women's roles, but also men's roles and the feminine within women, within men. They also wanted to do art and be there for their children and be at the births of their children. And so many things relating to the feminine that was also within men changed. And in 84, I think, the then Pope gave her another boost up of Queen of Heaven. And once again, everything that comes under the feminine, which is also all the disenfranchised. So the civil rights movement had come in the 60s and the 80s. For the first time, people actually went to jail for spouse abuse and child abuse and molestation and sexual molestation, which had never happened before. So all those things moved up. And then in the 1990s, Mother Teresa of Calcutta had a vision of Mother Mary, and in it Mother Mary asked her to convince the Pope to change her status once again, and that status was to be co-mediator and co-redeemer with Jesus, equal. And if you know anything about Mother Teresa, she was not a liberal. She was extremely conservative. She did not believe in women priests. She didn't believe in birth control. She was an Eastern European conservative Catholic. So that would never have occurred to her from her own mind, so which really supports that she did receive that envision. And she spent the last 10 years of her life trying to convince the Pope to do that, who never did do it. So there is definitely a movement for that equality within the Church. But with this, I think with this Pope, we're not going to see it under his reign. But that movement has come up, and it's been supported by the archetypes of the divine feminine being raised up.
Well, I see just in the last few years, I see, because we have a radio show, we see people writing books and workshops, and it's all about the feminine. It's like a feminine movement, and it's very much needed, and I'm really glad to see this happening.
Well, people felt that they were gypped out of something. Some of the Protestants, when they realized the Catholics had a mother figure in the deity, felt gypped that they had to grow up without one. And they only had Father God, Jesus, and Mr. Holy Spirit, pretty much. So there was none of all the traits that go with the feminine that are so important within are relating to God. So a number of the more liberal Protestant churches have started incorporating Mother God, and in fact, a number of both Jewish and Protestant denominations now use the term Mother, Father, God, and acknowledge much more that within God there is both the feminine and the masculine, and we're missing out on a whole 50% of the God experience when we leave the feminine out.
Now, I've heard, I don't know if this is true, but they took a lot out of the Bible that was written about Mary, and it was destroyed.
You know, we have no way of knowing exactly what came out, but yes, there's evidence that up until about in the fourth century, about 325, there was that Mother Mary was regarded as equal to Jesus, and it was at a particular. Actually, it was the concept of Sophia, the divine feminine, that was taught up until that point, paralleled to the understanding of Christ, the divine masculine. And it was in the Council of Ephesus at that time that, sort of as a sideline to another debate, it was decided that it was too confusing for the people. They couldn't really tell Sophia and Christ apart. So why don't we just call everything Christ? And in one fell swoop, the divine feminine was wiped out of Christianity. And it's amazing how thoroughly that happened. It happened so thoroughly that people don't even know it was ever there before. People are surprised. People who have a lot of background in Christianity are totally surprised to find out that it was ever there. It wiped it completely out of our psyches, our understanding at all of the divine feminine being a part of Christianity.
Do you think that may have happened because the males at that time feared the energy of the female or the power of the female?
Possibly, or they just didn't understand it and therefore found it to be useless.
That's a shame.
Either one, yeah.
Because the nurturing part of the female was destroyed also. I mean,
right.
Go ahead.
Then we have God, who is, you know, the vengeful warrior God. And we lost God, who is the tender, merciful, supportive, comforting God.
And a lot of women, I don't know if it's in the Catholic religion or other religions also, as a child, they were almost told that they had to be like Mary.
Yes, you're right. And a lot of women have suffered from that because the way Mary was portrayed when terrible things happened. A woman or a girl would go to the priest and say, somebody's sexually abusing her. And the priest would tell the woman that Mother Mary never complained and she should just suffer the way Mother Mary did in silence. Or if a woman went and said her husband was beating her, she would be told the same thing. She should suffer in silence the way Mother Mary did. And then also women were very much shamed for being sexual. And then that was also put under Mother Mary, that Mother Mary wasn't sexual, so what's their problem? So it's very sad because I've met a lot of women who were formerly Catholic or currently Catholic who had very negative feelings towards Mother Mary because of how she had been portrayed to them. And the sad thing is it's not Mother Mary at all. It's how these priests were rendering her in order to try to control women.
Now, there's been a movement in the last few years to explore Mary Magdalene, and she's been portrayed in different roles. I mean, I've heard different things about her. What do you find true about Mary Magdalene? she was a disciple of Jesus, but I heard some stories that people thought of her even as a prostitute type.
Well, it was Dan Brown's book that brought this whole scene up about whether Mary Magdalene was actually Jesus' lover, and they had a child together who grew up in France, and the whole story around that. What was very disturbing to me was Dan Brown is not a spiritual man. He does novels, and it wasn't about for spiritual reasons of any kind that he got into this, but he wrote it in such a way that people acted like it was truth of some kind, but he was just making a lot of money on it. He had no interest in it as what the spiritual truth was about anything at all. And he, the problem, the travesty to me in this is that I love Mother Mary, or I love Mary Magdalene for having been completely off, completely messed up. And from that place of being completely messed up, she completely fixed herself. She turned so totally around from being one of the most famous harlots of the Roman Empire to being the most devoted and advanced of Jesus' students. To me, that is wonderful good news. I was saddened by people feeling like they needed instead for her to have had been Jesus' lover or wife, because what bothers me in that is that then means that the most beautiful woman gets the most powerful man, and then that's considered success for a woman. To me, that's ridiculous. That's the oldest story ever told. And why would we women be happy about that story? Instead, that the woman who messed up the most by her own hard work and her own dedication transformed and became completely changed. And she did not do that by sleeping with the boss. Now that is news. That is different and new. So I was very disturbed by women latching on to the Dan Brown version of the story, as if that was good news.
That's sad. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I heard also. So
yes.
It really came out as the truth when it's basically just a novel. Is that correct?
Right. Right.
Now, let's go back on your story. When did you begin your spiritual search? I read in your bio that you were raised by missionaries.
Yes, I was. So I was born and grew up in Switzerland. My parents were Southern Baptist missionaries, theologians. So I began feeling like I wanted more than what the church I was raised in had to offer. I felt like it didn't go far enough into an actual transformative path. And I became critical of that as a teenager. And then in my late teens, I read autobiography of a yogi by Yogananda. And I went, yes, yes, see, so there is more, and started studying various Eastern teachings and just reading up a storm, learning. And by the time I was about 20, I moved into a yoga ashram and lived in a yoga ashram for several years and intensively practiced yoga that way, not just physical yoga, the whole lifestyle, the whole meditations and work. And then I married young, and my husband was interested in the Sufi path, which is the mystical Muslim path, and we went to a Sufi training school, an intensive, and lived there for a year also and got that training. And not that long after, I discovered the first time I came across a mystical Christian path. And it was actually to my dismay, because I was adamantly biased against Christianity by that point. I'd been arguing with my parents for years how Hinduism was better than Christianity. And I was very dismayed to find the kind of teacher-student relationship I'd been looking for in the ashram and in the Sufi community, been looking for everywhere, that I found it in a Christian context, because I didn't want to find it in a Christian context. So it took eating some real humble pie for me to be willing to accept that the teachers I had prayed for years, finding a real spiritual teacher and a path that actually had spiritual teachers and intensive training, I had to really humble myself to be willing to accept that in a Christian form. And as I now see it, I don't think I would have been given anything else spiritually if I had been too proud to accept that. That would have been the end for this lifetime for me. So it was a crucial moment for me to see that I had been praying for to find a real spiritual teacher, that I wanted to seriously put my whole life on this, to go as far as I could spiritually in this lifetime. And now that I've been praying for that for years, that it was given to me in a flavor that I didn't like would have been not acceptable. That would have shown I wasn't really ready to have a teacher or a spiritual path. So I'm very glad I figured that out in time before I sabotaged myself. And so from my about mid-20s on, I've been doing what I could to be on a mystical Christian path. I had individual teachers for about 17 years before I was ordained a priest, and 5 years later, a master teacher. In fact, today is my 10th anniversary of being a master teacher.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Can you pinpoint any particular situation or event that took you into this path here that you are presently?
You know, I think it was really, I was searching a lot to have a teacher. I'd read it from the yogic books I read. I'd gotten that there is such a thing, that Yogananda had this spiritual teacher who really ground him down to dust and then built him back up into something new. And I got, oh, there's a transformative path. It really exists, and it's intensive inner work and breaking down of all previous negative patterns and, as Jesus would say, rising up again as a new being. And I'd wanted it so much. And yet in the yoga ashrams, I found that it was, you know, the yogi came around about once every year, and we had a 15-minute meeting with him. And it was getting very clear to me that we weren't really transforming. We learned all kinds of disciplines. I could sit like a pretzel and meditate for hours, and I was doing the kirtan spiritual dances, and I ate the perfect diet, and I dressed the perfect way, and I did all those things. But I noticed that when you put us in the kitchen together, we went at each other as much as we ever had there. And it was clear to me that we weren't really transforming spiritually. We had a lot of new gear to wear and language to talk, but we hadn't really changed. And I found in the Sufi school, same thing, that people weren't getting individual training, and therefore, without having a real teacher, they weren't really transforming. And from that, I had this great desire to find, and I thought it would be that I would find another ashram, another yogic path, which would lead me to finding a real teacher who would really take me through the transformative work. And I didn't care how hard it was going to be, and I didn't care what I needed to do for it. I knew I wanted that more than anything. So that I would say, was the precipitating prayer in me that then led me to a mystical Christian order, that I saw it in the people's eyes the first time I went there. I saw light in their eyes. And it was what I wanted to see in the eyes of the people at the ashram, and I didn't see it of the people at the ashram as much as I wanted to. And my first reaction was, it made me mad, because that's what I wanted to be happening at the ashram, and I knew it wasn't. But then I went and I asked them, what is this you have? What do you do? They go, well, we have teachers that individually work with us and train us and bring us through initiations, and they work us over, and they knead us like dough until we can hold actually the light inside our beings, not just as a thought, but as a reality, and we're transformed. And I had to then go, that is what I want. So it was really my longing for that was the precipitating one, really wanting it more than anything, and then being willing to take it in whatever form it came in.
Wow. You were, just by you saying that, made me realize that that's what I've been looking for. So this is wonderful. Now, Jesus studied with many different religions. That's what I hear, that he went off on his tracks and he learned about all different kinds of religions. Is this true?
He sure did know them all. We don't really know where he got it from, but he sure knew them all, because he could quote have debates in, and he used things from all different directions. So, yes, he didn't limit himself to only Judaic teachings.
Well, it sounds like this is what you did.
Yes, and in the teachings we now do, we have a center there in Seattle, too, and we have, it is essentially a mystical Christian path, because you really do need to pick a path and walk it. If you don't pick a path and you just keep doing buffet style from all different paths, what happens is you're kind of standing at the crossroads and you pick a little from this and a little from that, and a little from this and a little from that. But what happens is you never leave the crossroads. You're still at the crossroads many years later. And, you know, if people want to be a perpetual seeker, that's fine, but they need to know they'll never leave the crossroads. I recommend people pick a path and throw themselves into it and do it with all their heart. And then if at some point it turns out that is not the path for them, then switch it and do another one with all your heart. Then you will really grow. You don't grow from standing and doing the smorgasbord, pick and choose. And the big reason is that when you do that, you're going to pick and choose what you like and don't like. And it's usually precisely the things you don't like that you need to be doing the work on. So you're going to avoid the main work.
Did you bring tools with you? I mean, because you, from the different religions, that, for example, the yoga, did you bring those tools in with you and in the work that you're doing now?
Yes, we do have, we don't do physical yoga practices, but we have, our tradition has in it teachings and practices that come from wherever the truth came from. And we have a great emphasis on it's the inner path that we look to guide people along and help people with, and we have initiations that are more from an Eastern direction. But all of it is to bring people into union with God, who is at the center of their beings, to bring them into that love relationship, that love embrace that is available within them. And the great teachers of all the religions, the mystical teachers of all of them, the saints of all, have taught the same thing about going in, but they just teach it with a little different flavor. So it doesn't matter that much that you pick one, but you do need to find one that has teachers that can actually teach you, that will actually do that work if you want to do that intensive work that actually transforms. Then you need to find a path that has teachers that can take you as far as you're hoping to go.
Who was your first teacher?
In the mystical tradition? In the Christian one?
Yes.
Okay. There was an order that didn't stay around that long. It was called the Holy Order of Mans, and I started with them and went through the first initiation with them, but their founder died, and they got shaky, and then also they would not take people who were married and parenting into the full teachings, and I was at that point married and parenting. So that only went a short distance, but it did open me to that this was a real path, and this is what I wanted and needed. But then it wasn't available for a number of years. I went off to Sufi school. I came back from Sufi school, and a few years later heard that someone who had been ordained through that tradition as a master teacher was now teaching and making the teachings available to those who were married and parenting, making the full teachings available. So I jumped right on that opportunity, and I lived in Kentucky at the time, and he was in southern Indiana, and I traveled there and met with him and asked him if he would be my teacher, and just thought I'd die with joy when he said he would. And that person, whose name is Father Peter Bowes, is the co-director with me on this order that we founded together. So we founded our order, which is called the Order of Christ Sophia, and we operate centers called Centers of Light around the country in 13 cities. And we're co-directors of this. We founded it together, and we've started it in 99, so we've been at it for 12 years now.
So you have centers, I see, in Seattle, Oakland, Milwaukee, Denver, Boston, Dallas, and seven more. I just have seven of them here, right?
Yeah.
So tell us more about the Order of Christ Sophia.
We are... we are, as I said, founded in Mother, Father, God, the masculine, the feminine, divine, both, and we work with Christ and Sophia, and then Jesus and Mary as equals. And I'm female, and there's a male as co-directors. We have male and female priests and deacons, and we also work with the masculine and feminine in each person in developing it. So we're deeply mystical, meaning deeply dedicated to helping people find God within them and come into a direct face-to-face experience and relationship with God within them and come into that lover-beloved relationship with their Creator. We also are, both of us who direct this, we're both previously psychotherapists. So we're very cognizant of the importance of people doing their psychological work along with the spiritual work, that if you try to ignore the psychological, it's going to come and get you from behind later. So we have people who just come. We have Sunday services in all of our centers, and we have classes during the week. We have introduction to Christian mysticism classes, which we usually recommend if people are curious about us, come to one of that. It's just 6 weeks long, once a week, and it gives people a bit of a flavor of what we do, who we are, and what we do. And in those, right from the beginning, we introduce people to some of the direct experiential things with God, because we don't even care that much about what we say. We care much more about people getting to their own experience so they know for sure not only that God is, but start having experiences of who God is from their own knowing. So that is the mystical path, that people come to know God from their own knowing, and that nobody can take away from them because they've experienced God and they've now know for themselves. It's not a theological concept. It's a truth. And we have people who just want to come around for something now and again, and that's fine. We have others who approach the way I did when I came, going, I want the whole thing, and I will do anything it takes to come into a full experience and opportunity to grow in my life and be of service to others. And for those, we have training that goes all the way through to master teacher. So it's a variety depending what people want. People want very different things from the spiritual, and we're happy to address people on whatever level they want to approach.
So are there new centers coming about? It sounds like you're growing like crazy.
I'm sure there will be, but at the moment we just started in Ann Arbor, Michigan, so we're in the process of purchasing our center there and getting it up and running. And it kind of ebbs and flows. Sometimes there's several centers in a year that open up, and then it's time to be strengthening and deepening and fortifying the ones that are already there. So we don't have specific ones in mind right now, but I'm sure there will be more.
Do you teach meditation to go along with prayer?
Absolutely. In fact, every morning we gather together and meditate. Whoever wants to meditates with us together every morning in all of our centers for a half hour of silent meditation. We teach it as being essential to the inner life.
Well, that helps in my own experience. That helps anchor the spiritual part in your soul as you go out to the daily life and the busy life.
Absolutely.
So your new book, it sounds to me like it's you put all your teachings together in one book. Is that how it came about?
Well, it's a compilation of teachings, lectures, and seminars I've held through a number of years that I put together in that book in a way that would give people a sense of many different angles. Like there's chapters on spiritual growth and development, on finding the right spiritual teacher for you, on spirit healing and empowerment, on Mother Mary. There's a couple of chapters on Mother Mary, chapters on how to relax into God, chapters on going deeper, living as monks for God in the world of the senses, how to start giving of yourself. So there's many, many different aspects that are addressed in it that I'm very practical, and in this order, we actually are very practical in how we approach everything. So we look to have teachings be accessible to people, think what they can actually dig their teeth in and do something with right away, not just things that sound nice and maybe inspiring, but then you don't know what to do with them.
Well, your book sounds like your order. I mean, you can take one chapter and just read it, or you could read the whole book. I mean, it sounds like it's one. If a person wants just to choose one chapter, they could do that.
Absolutely. Yes, or read it in any order. They can pick one that pertains to them at that time and do that first.
It serves as a, what somebody said, it serves as a guidebook for those seeking God.
Yes.
Do you have any centers of light in the San Francisco Bay Area?
Oakland, yes, Oakland, which is right across the bridge from San Francisco.
Okay. You don't have anything going in the other direction, like, San Jose or or
not at this time.
Okay.
Because our listeners are in the San Jose area, but that would not stop them from actually purchasing your book, because that would be a good start to see if they would want to look more into your order.
You know what else is our website has lots of little videos, instructional videos, and lots of information. The website is centers, with an S on the end, centersoflight.org. And I also recommend you, listeners who want to know more of what we teach, about what they can look on YouTube. We've got quite a few YouTubes. So if on YouTube you look for Mother Claire Watts, or the other co-director, Father Peter Bowes, and Bowes is B-O-W-E-S, they will find a lot to think about and get a sense of what we teach, and hopefully a lot of teachings that are helpful to them too. So both the website or on YouTube, there's quite a bit to be found.
Now, you studied Jung, and he is a great deal into archetypes. Do you teach that in the in your church?
Yes, we do. We do work with the archetypes, and we work with a dream analysis. We also work a lot with astrology and people's astrological signs.
Wow, that's great, because that's what I'm doing right now. I'm in a dream group, and actually the counselor that is running it studied Jung. So
yeah.
You can working with your dreams is like God coming through your dreams and telling you what you need to work on.
Yes, it's a great way for our soul, our inner self, to be able to communicate with us, or to try to communicate with us if we're listening and if we make the effort to understand what it is that's being said to us. We have to learn symbolic language a good bit to start to understand what it means. And usually we need someone else. Even the best Jungian analysts often have trouble with their own dreams and solicit other people to give them a neutral view.
It's fascinating. And I didn't realize that you worked with astrology also.
That also, yes. Father Peter's actually written a book on astrology too. So yes, we work a lot with astrology because we're working to help people understand themselves and understand other people better. Peace on earth through inner peace is a large emphasis we have. So by people coming to understand themselves through astrology and then understanding others through astrology, they can learn to be more tolerant of other people, understanding that people really are different and aren't supposed to all be the same.
The world would be very boring if it was that, if that was the case.
Yes, sure would.
So in Mystical Roses of Peace, your book, is there a chapter on astrology in that, in your book?
There is not in that book a chapter on astrology, no. Though I think I allude to it in various places, just why it matters, but not an actual chapter. There's way too much there to, you know, put it in one chapter. What astrology, anything that anybody could actually use in astrology.
There's actually a test, the Jungian test that helps support people knowing how they relate to people and that kind of thing. Do you
the Myers-Briggs?
Yes,
the Myers-Briggs. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, actually, in Jesus' time, astrologers were used all the time. I mean, they were thought of as a high order.
Well, the wise men were astrologers.
Right.
So, actually, the first people to figure out the Messiah was here were astrologers. So there were the shepherds who were given the message through divine revelation. And then there was the astrologers who did it through studying the stars.
And that was, in most religions, that has been casted out of the Bible or not studied.
Yes. I think it was people got worried about it, that people were going to see astrologers to discover truth instead of going inside themselves or going to their churches to discover truth. So the priests wanted the people to be coming to them, not going to other people for insight. So it had to be banned, and so it was.
Now, bringing in the feminine power, because our world is in such a chaos right now, bringing in the feminine power that has been lost for so long, or barely seen, let's put it that way, do you think this is a part of making the world peaceful again?
Yes, I do. We have gone way too far in our male point of view in the world, where the masculine looks to dominate and control and own and use. So that's what we've done with the planet, with the earth, and what we've done internationally and how we've related to other people. And we very much need the feminine perspective. And I don't mean women by that. I mean the feminine that each of us has, men and women, have within us. The feminine aspect of relatedness and community, and the working in cooperation with planet Earth instead of in destruction of planet Earth, and honoring what we have here, and working in growing in wisdom. Like I personally study permaculture, and we try to have sustainable practices in all of our centers of light. And I live in Colorado, where we're establishing a small sustainable farm for a lot of our own food consumption, and being very careful about our environmental practices to try to save the topsoil and what we need to do to have erosion not happen, and to be respectful of the wonderful gifts we have. So all of those are more feminine ways of regarding the earth. And again, it hasn't got to do with women. It has to do with the feminine that is within each person. And we absolutely need that to be coming out, to balance out the kind of rape and pillage attitude that has been going on for several millennia on the planet.
I see that happening in a lot of different communities. I mean, people are coming together as communities and beginning to have community gardens, and many churches are doing as yours is doing. So,
yes.
I mean, I think deep down inside of us, we know that this is what is needed.
I agree. I think anyone who tunes in would pick up on that.
So I'm glad to hear that your church is doing that also. Do you reach out to other churches?
We do. We work in some of our cities, especially. We're parts of ecumenical groups, and we do peace-related things together often, or social justice-related things together. So we're very happy to be friendly, not with other churches, but all of the religions, that to be working cooperatively and to demonstrate peace in our how we relate to others, to establish those principles on Earth.
That's a great example, because a lot of our wars, I mean, most of our wars, I say, are based on religious differences. So if we can all respect each other's philosophies and religions, then there would be no war.
Yeah, I think war is more often used as an excuse. I mean, religion's more often used as an excuse for war. We want to go take something that somebody else has, and then we justify it with war. I mean, with religion, by making them ungodly and making ourselves godly, and then it justifies our misbehaviors. I think it's rarely actually about religion.
It's about greed?
Yes, it's about greed and power.
And there again, that's not the feminine power. I mean, that's not the feminine energy. So I think through history, it goes back and forth from feminine to masculine. And do you think now we're trying to blend it in together so it's really an equal energy with the masculine and feminine?
I do, and I think that's why Carl Jung was saying the Catholic Church having elevated Mother Mary to equal status is that's how things change. That all major changes have to start with the archetype. First, the archetype has to be changed, and then everything else can follow. And that's why he predicted it was so important that that was happening when it did.
Well, I hope that we get to this point before it's too late, because it's really needed. Mother
Earth. Yeah, we're pushing our luck, aren't we?
Yes, we are. But thank goodness for people like you and your church and your order that's bringing things to light. And your book, can that people get that on Amazon?
Yes, they can.
Okay.
Mystical Roses of Peace.
And we want to remind everybody to go on to the website. Do you want to give that out so people can actually learn from the website? If you don't have a church near where you live, you can just go on the website and get the book and learn from that way.
You know, even more, we actually have online, we have classes that are over the phone for people who aren't near one of our centers. So on our website, you'll also see the a link to go to our online classes. We call them the Sophia Wisdom School. So that is definitely also an option people can check into. So our website, again, is centers, with an S on the end, centersoflight, LIGHT.org.
And it's called Sophia Wisdom School.
School, yes, is what our classes are on there. But you'll find it on the website. And we offer in them everything we offer in our in-person classes. So we have international ones as well as for the USA.
Thank goodness for the Internet.
Yes. Yes.
Now, if somebody wanted to meet you in person, do you travel from one center to another?
Almost every weekend, yes. So I do the rounds, and so does Father Peter do the rounds. So I'm in each center about twice a year, and you'll see on the on our website, again, under the locations, you'll be able to see where the locations are that we are and when we'll be being there. So I'll be, back in the Oakland area, not for a while there. Oh, there it is, November 5th. So there's a ways out before I'm there again. But if people are traveling in other places, they can certainly come see me there.
Okay. If it's if you do it online, does that mean that people can chat and ask questions and that kind of thing, or is it different?
Yes. If they're online, if they become a part of that school online, they can actually attend our seminars that we teach each weekend in different places. They can attend it online, and they can definitely ask me questions directly.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, our local listeners would be closest to your Oakland church, but
yes.
We have listeners from all over that listen on the Internet, so they can go and look at where your centers are, and if there's not one close by, take a class on the website.
Yes.
So we thank you for being with us today, and we want to remind people of your newest book and to look into it and be sure to see if that's something that you want to read. It's called Mystical Roses of Peace. sounds like there's a lot of good information there. Do you have a last minute message to send to our listening audience before we have to go?
I would like to encourage people to not put off their spiritual growth. So if you're listening, I have a sense you're already feeling a tug towards the spiritual. You know, you may think later in life you're going to have more time, but chances are you're not. So nothing matters more than your spiritual growth and development. Nothing could possibly be more important. It's what you as a soul are here for. So I encourage you to put that in the center of your schedule. Make that number one, and then build the other things, that parts of your life around that. Make your relationship with the God self inside you the primary thing, and deeply commit to do whatever it takes to grow into that relationship, and you will without a doubt never regret that.
Well, thank you for all the work that you've done, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. Goodbye.
Goodbye.